first drag race winner Priyanka, 70s British funk group Simande, Grammy-nominated and Juno Award winner Alison Russell, iconic dancehall queen Sister Nancy, post-rock legends Tortoise, and many more. The festival also features film screenings, visual art, symposium discussions, and as always, many surprises. Get your tickets and passes now at popmontreal.com. A CKUT co-presentation.
It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between, professional, student, and community productions in and around Montreal, the island also known as Tsuchage in Ganiagahaga or in Munayang in Anishinaabe, where we spell theater with an R-E at the end. I'm your host, Sarah DeA, recording from home on Thursday, September 9th, 2022. On tonight's show, we are gearing up for the fall season by previewing the freshly unveiled plans for Montreal's two big English theaters. My guests tonight include Lisa Rubin, Executive Director at The Seagull. She explains the season's tagline, "All the Feels."
The productions not only lend itself to very satisfying and entertaining experiences, there may also be some emotional reactions and some empowerment, you know, going on behind the scenes. Like, it really is all the feels in terms of the different range of emotions one can experience when going to the theater, but it stems from a place of like joy and excitement.
Centaur Theatre's Ida Holmes on the radical new show that will launch the 54th season that will bridge a French theatre and an English one, quite literally.
My love of the city of Montreal has just been growing and growing since I got there 5 years ago. And so it's a celebration of what makes Montreal so unique and so special.
Plus, a theater company that gives fresh new faces their first opportunity on stage, new co-artistic director Rebecca Gibeon at Persephone Theater.
Certainly in terms of the shared values, I think she and I have both for years really, really craved theater that supports emerging artists and theater that emphasizes diverse stories. So it just so happens that it was just like this amazing thing that Persephone actually encapsulates those values already, and those are values that she and I have really cared about for years.
The Seagull Center unveiled plans for their fall-winter season a week ago tonight, and we start with a spooky and the slapdash. We eventually enter a classroom to learn about learning a new language and culture. We veer into family ties and living with prejudice, and finish the season with one of the most extraordinary women to ever have lived. I spoke with The Seagull's executive and artistic director, Lisa Rubin, yesterday. Welcome, Lisa, to Upstage. Great to have you back. How are you doing?
I'm very well, Sarah. Thanks for having me back.
Does this feel like a normal fall for you? It's kind of like there's this feeling of everything's going, quote unquote, back to normal, but I'm not sure if it totally is.
I feel like I can't say it because then I'm going to jinx it. But in terms of the energy and the workload and the excitement, yes. In terms of the fact that there's a lot of still unknowns, I guess it's a little bit of what we're used to and what we've been used to. And what almost, I mean by, yeah, unknowns, I guess I mean by, will people come? Will people get sick? Do we still have to worry about these things because it's been so great right now for so long, kind of living in a quote unquote normal place? But we've been trained and conditioned to be prepared for anything to happen.
Expect anything. And maybe refer to things as the Scottish play, let's say, instead of like, there's a bit of superstition, I would assume, that's still kind of hanging around.
Yes. Good point.
If you had to sum up the theme, if there is a theme for this coming season.
Yeah, well, we're going with all the feels. And I think it really stems from all the feels, as in goosebumps of how excited we all are about these productions, but because the productions not only lend itself to very satisfying and entertaining experiences, there may also be some emotional reactions and some empowerment, you know, going on behind the scenes. Like, it really is all the feels in terms of the different range of emotions one can experience when going to the theater, but it stems from a place of like joy and excitement.
I quite like the sentence, all the feels. It's a kind of like an internet language that's cropped up in the last couple of years to reflect exactly what you're talking about. So it's kind of a modern kind of feeling. I like that lilt. You really do have, you know, a span of things running from, you know, Supernatural, Dracula, returning to Rick Miller on stage, who puts on these energetic shows. And then we're moving in the direction of musical cabarets to close out the season. Like, it truly is just a little bit of everything. I'd love to start with Dracula because it is the first show coming up, but also I just love vampire stories. So I got really energized when I saw that. Tell me about Dracula, A Comedy of Terrors.
Well, if you love Dracula, you're going to love the show, because you really don't need to know anything about Dracula to love the show. It's really, it's a celebration of theater in terms of the talent that we have. You know, we have five actors who are chameleons. They'll be playing various characters, taking wigs on and off, taking costumes on and off, going into very like high level of like sketch comedy and very Mel Brooks-esque 39 steps, you know, very rapid fire humor that is kind of brings out the best sometimes theater has to offer. And we remember that a lot of what we know today stems from that kind of vaudevillian type of performance. So this vampire is really like one big joke in a very good way, in a very satisfying way.
Is it the bones of the original like Dracula story, or does it take the, like, does it kind of spin the story on its head? Like, are we meeting a lone vampire alone in a castle?
It has, I think, the mainstream knowledge of vampire included. So you're going to have characters that you probably know, Mina, Dracula, Lucy, Westfeldt, you know, like you're going to have these names like from taken from Bram Stoker's Dracula, you know, with a little twist.
I'm speaking with Lisa Rubin, who is the artistic and executive director at the Siegel Center, and we're talking about the 2022-2023 season. It was unveiled just a week ago, and we're talking about Dracula, A Comedy of Terrors, which will be starting just in time for Halloween, October 23rd until November 13th. Then we don't skip ahead to the new year. Do you have another show before the holiday season?
Well, I think one thing we learned during the pandemic when we did Super Dogs the musical was how important it is and how much families want to come out to the theater and how much we want something for the kids. So in planning the season, I didn't want to lose that. I didn't want to forget about the families. And so who better than Jordy Productions, who is known in the city for their theater for young audiences, to work with. And so Jordy teamed up with Rick Miller and Craig Francis and Paul Van Dyke and to kind of put together this family-friendly Frankenstein with a lot of great messages as usual. And so we're going to have that as a kind of an add-on to our four plays, like, you know, and here's one for the families. And we're just so thrilled to have Jordy at the Siegel Center doing it.
It was really energizing when you did Super Dogs because so many kids were in the audience, and obviously their dogs being in the show was like just this totally different experience. So you're kind of hoping to recreate that feeling of having the parents bringing their kids into the space.
Yeah, we're very aware of, you know, that theater we can't take for granted, especially with the generation, the TikTok generation, you know, like we need parents to be empowered to want to give their children cultural experiences that are off screen. So we have to provide for them. And that's the only way then later in life as adults, you know, they're going to want to make room for theater in their life. Sarah, I know you're a huge theater fan, but I also know it's because you've had these wonderful experiences in theater as a kid, whether as a tree or whether as an audience member.
That's right. My mom was bringing me to the theater when I was like just a wee kid, and I would come home just either traumatized or like full of dreams. Like my eyes were like my imagination was running wild because I had seen more adult content, I think, than I was ready for perhaps. But something like a Frankenstein is like a great introduction for so many kids, and it really lets them to start thinking about live performance. Mm-hmm. I do also have to point out and realizing that this story is very refreshed because you're bringing in a young character named Mary. So hat tip to Mary Shelley, who wrote Frankenstein, and she's the character of a graphic novelist. So this is why you're billing it as a comic book come to life.
It's a, you know, this is really a, you know, Geordie and Cadoons and word production, but everything I know about it, it's using their signature style of multimedia to bring to, and combining, you know, that incredible energy and theatrical technology into something that we already know. So that's why I think this kind of living comic book, kind of seeing a comic book come to life using projections and animation, and then pairing that with the actors, is going to be really fun for all kids and adults alike to see.
So that is Frankenstein, which is going to be a production with Cadoons and Geordie. And that is before, I think, the holiday break. So it's going to be happening kind of, yeah, in tandem with Dracula at the same time. Okay, so Dracula and Frankenstein.
Spooky fall.
Dracula and Frankenstein coming to roost in the fall. Okay, and then in the new year, a play simply titled English.
Yes. It's so cool. I love it so much. This play, I've been working on doing this play before the pandemic started because I got a hold of the script early on in its development before it even had its world premiere in New York. And it's a great story. Like, you know, pre-pandemic, even though it was scheduled to have its world premiere in New York, they were still letting us do a version here, which was amazing. And then of course everything was canceled. So now it's had its New York premiere, which is amazing. It was so spectacular. I got to see it, and it had all the feels as it had when I read the play on paper. And I'm so happy we're doing it. And just, you know, yeah, the play is about students in Iran who are taking an English class. And almost the entire show takes place in an English class. And if anyone has been in a class where they're studying a new language, you know how challenging it is to find your words. And through these students and their experiences and their reasons that we get to learn about why they want to learn English, we really, I think, opens our eyes to reminding us of what we lose and what we have to gain when speaking a language that isn't your mother tongue, particularly in Montreal right now, how much this is going to resonate with everyone, but also having a cast, you know, that's culturally Iranian, Persian, like working with a team like that. I mean, that's hoping to bring in new audiences, building bridges. Will be very special.
Yeah, as you mentioned, the question of language and learning it and adapting to a different culture and language is universal, but we're going to really see this through a different perspective, through playwright Senaz Tusi's viewpoint of having four students who are Persian, because that's not quite the experience that people here would necessarily have. So that'll be fascinating. So that's English starting on March 19th. The next up, Prayer for the French Republic, by a name that is familiar to audiences.
Yes.
Joshua Harmon.
Joshua Harmon wrote Bad Jews, and he does not disappoint in this one. You take Bad Jews and you like up it a few notches, but it has his signature characters who are really rooted in reality. He makes you feel like, you know, this person, I know this person, this could be my family. You know, it's so well done in that respect. takes place in 2016 in France, but then you add on another layer of the ancestors or of the family that in play from 1944, having just survived the Holocaust. And it's a bold statement and a glimpse into the world of anti-Semitism and, you know, the questions that the Jewish community asked themselves in terms of, is it ever going to get any better? Or is this, are we going to perpetually live in this state? And, but it brings to light a lot of modern conflicts and discussions that people, you know, wrestle with today, which is why it's so powerful. And I hope that it makes a big impact, not just for the Jewish community, but for the non-Jewish community who will see it.
This is interesting because Bad Jews by Joshua Harman was, if we remember right, was kind of lighter. It was still very acerbic, very tongue-in-cheek. We have three contemporary young Jewish people, one of whom is dating someone who is Christian. And so all these questions of like interfaith assimilation come up, but it was done in a really humorous, very fresh kind of way. This seems much darker.
It's actually quite similar. And then like Josh has this incredible ability to, yes, to address darker issues. And yet, because he's, I think in a way he's talking to an audience who knows what he's talking about. He doesn't have to lay it on thick. He just goes for it. And that's where the familiarity comes in. That's why the characters sound like you could just really be at a cafe talking with your friend, even if the subject matter one would think wrestles with deeper and darker issues. This is what we talk about on a day-to-day basis. So in that respect, it's going to move very quickly and be highly enjoyable, even if, you know, there's a little bit of those, you know, heartbreaking or emotional or, you know, memories that bring, make you choked up as well. Not gonna sugarcoat that. There's some of that in there too.
Okay, bracing ourselves. Prayer for the French Republic coming April 23rd. The season closes out with an absolutely fantastic selection. It's going to excite the people who saw it at Fringe this summer and get the people who missed it and couldn't get tickets even more excited. And that is the story of Josephine Baker, as told by Tamisha Harris.
Yeah, well, you said it. It was the super duper hit at the Fringe Festival this summer. It won the Siegel Center Award for Best Production. I was inundated with emails, texts, phone calls, making sure that I got to the theater to see it, which says something about, says something beautiful about the power of when an audience is so inspired and then they come to me, you know, when they see that I have an opportunity to then want to inspire more people by a performance, it forces you to listen. You know, it really forces you to listen because word of mouth is the most powerful thing. And Tamisha is unbelievable and Josephine Baker's story is unbelievable. So what we could do is really give it a new production. And I think that's what's exciting is anyone who saw it at the Fringe, they're going to see a brand new production, new set, new costumes, new staging, new choreography, but same incredible actor performing, playing the role of Josephine Baker, music and story that everyone fell in love with at the Fringe. So yeah, we're all really excited. And I loved to have, like, when we announced the whole season and that one came up, like there was a very audible sound.
Gasp.
gasp of like, oh, like it was just, we know that just says so much right there to hear that reaction.
I've read about Josephine Baker's life in various different points. And it's like, not even like if someone were to write a play about a fictional character called Josephine Baker, they wouldn't squeeze everything that she lived through into the play because it's just so unreal that somebody would live such a wild life from kind of rags to riches, civil rights icon, spying for the Allies, assisting the Allies in World War II, but also, you know, having multiple lovers and multiple animals and multiple children and a chateau. Wait. Like, if that was a fictional character, you'd be like, okay, enough. Like, it doesn't need to be this complicated, but that was her life.
I know. It's weird. It's wild. And it's so unbelievable. And, you know, just where we've been talking, we're in the very preliminary stages of discussing this new production, directed and choreographed by Sean Cheeseman, who, as maybe you'll save this and ask him this one day, but like, he's a big dog lover, and he had one of his previous dogs he named Josephine. That is how much of a fan and how he is of Josephine Baker. And we talked a lot about incorporating photos and projections and of the real Josephine in her life, because this is real, because it's almost like you said, is like you couldn't have written this. No one would believe it, but this is who she was. This is all that she accomplished in her life and how she paved the way for so many artists, you know, today.
And Sean Cheeseman, just to go back, our choreographer whose work we saw in April Fools, excellent choreographers, worked with some of the big greats. And he loves dogs so much. Like he carries his dogs around with him when he comes to the Seagull. I remember seeing him opening night I was like, why is there a dog on stage? Oh, it's Sean Cheeseman. His dog is in like a carry-on. Uh-huh. And there she is on stage with all the performers.
That's the right.
Yeah. Well, there's so much to look forward to this coming season. Can you pick a favorite? Are you allowed to pick favorites? Like, what are you most excited for personally?
I'm with Dracula, I'm excited about seeing those actors do their thing. With English, I'm excited about welcoming in artists and an audience that we haven't had here before. With Prayer, I'm directing it, so I'm like obsessed with it all day, and I'm excited for the impact I think it could have in my own culture and background. And then with Josephine, I'm excited because everyone else is getting ready for it. I think she's amazing. The team we have behind it is incredible, and like we're truly taking a fringe show and giving birth to like a new level of a professional production of it, and who knows where it's going to go from there. So like every single show, and Frankenstein, you know, I'm excited to work with Jordy and Craig and Rick and Paul, and you know, and to have the spaces filled with families of all ages. So like there's something about it, it's like children. You can't pick your favorites because literally everything is exciting, and everything is something to look forward to. And I think it's palpable even with my colleagues at the Seagull Center. We're all feeling it this year. We're all feeling excited about all of the shows and what it means. Yeah, no favorites, just getting through them with no bad surprises.
Knocking on wood and spinning around three times and spitting.
Yeah.
Lisa, thank you so much for stopping by. I'm really energized to see what's to come this year. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Sarah. Thanks.
That was Lisa Rubin, Executive and Artistic Director, speaking from the Seagull Center yesterday. You can reserve your tickets and find more information about the upcoming season at seagullcenter.org or call the box office 514-739-7944. I'm Sarah DeA, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at ckut.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. Still to come, we will travel from the Seagull in Côte des Neiges all the way to Old Montreal to check out the Centaur's upcoming season. And before the end of the hour, we'll take a jaunt back to where we started and review an interview from last month about an ongoing show you can check out for yourself from a cast of fresh-faced performers about seeking fame, fortune, and fulfillment. Ida Holmes is entering her fifth year as artistic director at the Centaur Theatre, the Old Montreal Theatre's 54th season. Topics coming up will range from bilingualism to Me Too to love and infirmity to a coming-of-age tale. And there's an appearance from a celebrated jazz singer in there, too. I spoke with Ida Holmes yesterday, reaching her in Toronto, where she is hard at work on another production, shortly before she returns home for the fall launch. Welcome back to Upstage, Ida. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm good. I'm good. Nice to see you. Well, I'm hearing you and seeing you because
yes, the lovely technology of Zoom, and of course on the radio you can hear our wonderful voices. You are in Toronto today. What are you working on?
I'm doing a piece with the Peggy Baker Dance Project, which is a company here in Toronto of contemporary dance, and Peggy has commissioned a piece about experimental dance in Toronto in the 1970s. So it's a play with dances in it, and it's called Beautiful Renegades by Michael Ross Albert.
And we can't forget that your background is in dance, and you were a ballerina for many, many years before, you know, transitioning into theater. So is this calling on your dance experience?
Yeah, I mean, it's not the specific kind of dance I did, but the dance world and the challenges and exaltation of that world is all inside this piece. So it's a wonderful project, a beautiful company of dancers and dancers acting and actors dancing. And
do you feel like you're exercising a muscle that you don't get to use as often by working on a dance piece?
It's just that it's more present, but I feel like I'm always the same. I'm always jumping around the room trying to think with my body. So I think it's just actually being with some dances as well.
Well, being a director does involve thinking in terms of choreography and placing your actors and focusing on movement too. So your breadth of experience just lends that to whatever it is you're working on. Okay, so you're in Toronto working on that, but you will be back in Montreal very shortly because you've got a big season planned. We have four shows to talk about. It is the 54th season at Centaur. And we're starting with a very interesting proposition that involves a bus ride in the middle of the play. So tell me about Cyclorama.
Cyclorama is the result of a conversation that Sylvain Bélanger and I started when I very first got to Montreal about why are our two communities so separate. Sylvain is the artistic director of Théâtre Aujourd'hui, and he and I both of our institutions turned 50 at the same time. Sylvain and I were both at the National Theatre School at the same time, and we never met each other, because he was on the French program and I was in the English program. And we just were kind of fascinated and a little bit frustrated by this lack of contact even between the two communities. And so we talked about what we could do as a collaboration. And he said, let's talk to Laurence Dauphiné, this very talented bilingual artist who's really interested in documentary theater. And she kind of dove into the two threads of history of theater in Montreal and discovered where she personally sits in it, because when she got out of the theater school in French, the first job she got was to do Shakespeare in the Park in English. So so she's actually been able to cross over between the two communities. And she, in that crossing over, she met Antoine Yared, who has crossed over from French to English in a different way. And so the two of them, together with Aaron Hurley and Alexandre Fichteau, from McGill and UQAM respectively, got together and sort of pooled their knowledge and found the drama in that and created Cyclorama. And so it starts at Centaur. And the other thing that was cool that Laurence did was she pulled the two audiences. She did a survey and asked them what they knew about each other. And that kind of informed what she talks about in the piece. So you start at Centaur with a bit of that history and a bit of where it all comes from. And then the thing is, we wanted to mix our two audiences. So Centaur audience and Théâtre Aujourd'hui audience. The Théâtre Aujourd'hui audience, a lot of them have never been to Centaur, and a lot of the Centaur audience have never been to Théâtre Aujourd'hui. So the first thing that happens is they sit in the room together they watch this wonderful kind of madcap adventure through the history of theater in Montreal. Then they get on the bus and they go right up the Maine, which is the dividing line between our two communities and is full of its own history of theaters with the Le Monument National and all of these, the Maine line and even Cinéma L'Amour, you know, like it's all there. And then they arrive on Saint-Denis at Théâtre d'Aujourd'hui for the second half of the play, which is sort of the through line question is, why not get together? And that's what we're trying to do. It's a really, I've been watching the evolution of it. We've been working on it since before the pandemic. We did a lot of workshops during the pandemic to kind of unearth the story. And now it's ready and ripe for an audience to literally engage with it, which is so much fun. I love it too, because my love of the city of Montreal has just been growing and growing since I got there 5 years ago. And so it's a celebration of what makes Montreal so unique and so special.
I'm so glad to hear that your love for the city is growing and not diminishing. Only deepening. And yeah. I guess the one, I think this is fabulous. I love when there is a bringing together of the two worlds, whether it's just an Anglophone who gets to work in the Francophone scene or vice versa, or perhaps someone going to see a show in another language. My question is the logistics and the momentum. Has that been, how do you keep the momentum going by taking someone out of a dark theater space and bringing them outside and then bringing them to another dark space?
Well, the bus ride is animated as well. Okay. So the story never stops. Even though you're getting out of the theater and getting on the bus,
wow.
The story continues up the road. So so it's one continuous piece in the mind of, in our minds anyway. Yeah.
How ambitious, but also perfectly Montreal, because you're going to be on a bus that's probably going to have a traffic stop at some point and maybe hit a pothole or two. So, I mean, like truly an essential Montreal experience. And that's going to be the first show that's going to be the season opener?
Yes, in October. I believe it opens October the 11th.
And fabulous. So, Cyclorama, written by Laurence Dauphiné, as you mentioned, studied in French. First job was in English at Shakespeare in the Park. Extraordinary. I'm speaking with Ida Holmes, who is the top honcho over at Centre Theatre, looking ahead to the 54th season coming up later this fall. Now, the second piece, Sexual Misconduct of the Middle Classes, quite a mouthful, written by someone, I guess the closest thing we have to kind of like a buzz name in the playwriting world in Canada.
Yes, Hannah Moskowitz. Hannah is an amazing writer. I've been following her work for years. And this piece premiered just before the pandemic in Toronto at the Tarragon Theater. And even before it premiered, she sent it to me and she said, I'd love for you to have a look at this. And I immediately was just excited by it, because she's taking a very, what would be on the surface, well-trodden territory of, you know, a high profile professor has an affair with one of his talented students. And of course, it doesn't last. And what does that mean? But in the Me Too era, she's taken that, and instead of just simply making the professor into an ogre, she does something much more interesting, and she makes him into an object. And so for me, the brilliance of the piece is the way she tells that story through the eyes of the young student instead of through the eyes of the professor. And I'm so excited to work on the play. It's going to be the thing that I direct this year in the season. And I'm working with Marcel Jeannin, an actor who I've known since I was at theater school at the National Theater School of Canada. He's an incredible part of our community. And then a very young actor who's fresh out of school from the Francophone community, but who speaks English. Her name is Inez Defosse. And there's a bit of method in that madness, because we also commissioned a translation of the play by Fanny Britt. So at the end of the run, we're going to try and do a stage, just do a reading, a public reading of the translation in French. Because we often bring plays from the French community to the English community in translation, but it's a little bit less common to go the other way. And I'd like to build up that relationship a bit more.
That's absolutely beautiful. And I might be wrong, but I don't think I've ever seen a Hannah Moscovich play done in French in Montreal yet, unless I'm mistaken.
Not her part. Okay. There's been, they did a beautiful production of another one of her plays with Imago Theater. Micheline Chevrier directed Other People's Children, which was a fantastic show about just, again, pre-pandemic. I mean, that's, I guess, all we can ever say anymore about when something happened. But she's a really important playwright. This play won the Governor General's Award for Drama in 2021. And I think given that we're a city full of universities and creative writing departments, I think it's pretty relevant.
And it's surprising. I saw a headline today about a professor at a French university who's been caught after having relationships with students under which he had, you know, he was a position of authority. So it is very, very relevant. And these stories seem to crop up quite often. Sexual Misconduct coming November 11th. Then we skip forward to February at the Beginning of Time.
Before we do that, can I just put in a little plug for a little extra thing we're doing this year, which is we're hosting a beautiful concert by Renee Lee in December of her tribute to the great singers of jazz called Dark Divas. And it's on for two nights with her whole band. So it's not part of the subscription series, but I just wanted to give a little plug to that because I think she just won the Oscar Peterson Award at the Jazz Festival this year, and she's amazing. So I just wanted to throw that in.
Okay, powerhouse singer, and that's before the holiday break?
Yes.
Excellent. So much, like, great. Get those tickets, and you've got Christmas and the Hanukkah gifts settled. Fast forward to February at the Beginning of Time, another Steve Galluccio play, famous for chronicling not only his own life, but as a Montrealer, but the Italian, one of our illustrious Italian Montreal playwrights.
Yes, Steve is an amazing part of the fabric, I would say, of Montreal, and especially the theater community of Montreal and the LGBTQ community of Montreal. And he has he's always mined his life for the theater of it. There's certainly, this play is no different, but it takes from a different angle. It's not from his family growing up in St. Leonard. It's really the story of his relationship with his husband, who developed Alzheimer's at a young age, and then his life as a middle-aged gay man in a post-AIDS era. And so it's a beautiful, sort of like mining activity around what it is to be in this time as a man of a certain age in the Italian community of Montreal, and making sense of your life and with your friends. It's the three of him and his two best friends from high school. He's got, he's in the hospital just because he has some kind of an infection that he got on vacation, and he's with his best friends from high school, and they're kibitzing in the hospital, and all their life stories kind of come into it. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful play. We did a reading of it during the pandemic online. And I just was like, we have to do this. It's about what it means to love people, you know, and what it means to share a history with people, and what it means to come up against yourself inside of that history as well. So it's beautiful. He's super funny too. He wouldn't be Steve Galluccio without making a number of very, very successful witty repartees.
So a brand new work from him at the Beginning of Time, February 24th. We're already talking about 2023. And the fourth and final item we're going to discuss tonight, or fifth item, is a show that has been presented in French and has had a lot of really positive buzz about it. And that is King Dave, coming at the end of March. So tell me about Patrick-Emmanuel Abelard.
Patrick-Emmanuel Abelard, I've met him when I first got to Montreal. He was doing Urban Tales with us at Christmas time 5 years ago. And I just thought, who is this wonderful young actor? And I was excited by him. Then we did Choir Boy, and Mike Payette brought him in to Choir Boy. And I was just really excited to see him. And he was thrilled because he was kind of making his professional debut at Centaur. So he was developing this relationship to Centaur. Cut to 2020, and we brought him back to do the Angel Michael in Paradise Lost.
And then now going ahead, when King Dave got to Duceppe, Anglès Major created the adaptation, but he couldn't do the tour. So they brought Patrick Abelard in. So now Patrick has an entire career in English at the Centaur, and now he's on the biggest stage in Montreal in French, doing King Dave. So David Lorrain at Duceppe came and said, Patrick would love to do it in English. Would you be interested? And I said, Patrick? Absolutely. Absolutely. And so so now Patrick is working from the adaptation that Anglès Major did. And what Anglès and the adaptation did was take this play that's written from a sort of hardscrabble, snarky young man from North Montreal and filter it through the Black community in North Montreal, so the Haitian community in North Montreal. And so now what was a play, a Quebecois, a kind of celebrated Quebecois play, has got a new life, revealing a part of the city that is very, very important, but also very little talked about. And so it becomes a picture of what happens to a young man with no guidance in that toxic immigrant community of poverty and just trying to get by. And so it's harsh, but truly beautiful and it provocative in the best way.
I'm sorry, it's kind of wild to wrap your head around the fact that this was a one-man show that came out 15 years ago. We haven't changed the location, like where it's set. It's Montreal North. It's still the one-man story. But here, a Black performer comes in and changes the context, but not the story. And it gives it just a whole fresh angle that's been like really well received. Now it's going to be on stage.
Well, and that's the beauty of theater that links our humanity one to another. We, you know, that's what theater can do, is it can remind us how much we share with one another.
Ida, I know we can't pick favorites because they're like children, right? But is there anything that you're particularly excited for? Maybe Sexual Misconduct because you're directing it?
Well, I'm of course excited about that. There's one more thing that's, again, not part of the subscription series, but is a little tasty nugget, which I can't say it's my favorite, but it always makes me happy to know that Ronnie Burkett is coming back to town. And he'll be with us in May with his newest adaptation called Little Willie. That's what it's called. And it's an adaptation of Romeo and Juliet. With the same cast of characters from the Daisy Theater. But so I'm excited. He's going to be premiering in Quebec City at the Le Diamant. And then he's coming to us.
Wow.
We're gonna have him, welcome him back to the
the marionette extraordinaire, just a prairie boy who grew up to be like really into marionettes and just created, as you said, the Daisy Theater, this entire like alternative world of strange characters. And they're gonna reinvent Romeo and Juliet. Okay, so no sacred cows. Ida, this is a very exciting season. Fingers crossed everyone stays healthy and well. And we'll see you at the Centaur. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you. Thank you.
That was Ida Holmes, executive and artistic director at Centaur Theater. Their new programming launches later this fall. Tickets and more information on their four-play subscription package at centaurtheater.com or call 514-288-1229. I'm especially excited about that collaboration with the Théâtre du Centre d'aujourd'hui. I'm Sarah DeA, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week.
And there he was,
you're listening to Montreal's emerging indie folk gem, Bells Larson. Bells will be playing at the Diving Bells Social Club on September 9th to celebrate the release of his debut album, Good Grief, which explores themes of young love, lost love, and queer love. Join in for a beautiful evening of song and storytelling from Bells and support act Eve Parker Finley. Buy your tickets for September 9th at bluesguysturnblack.com. A CKUT co-presentation.
Welcome back to Upstage. I'm your host, Sarah DeA. Persephone Productions makes a point of giving new and emerging artists fresh opportunities to perform and hone their craft. Often, it's an actor's first booking out of theater school. And making that space is a shared passion for the two women who are just taking over the artistic director role, Rebecca Gibeon and Lila Gayemi. The first show under Gibeon and Gayemi's tenure is a fitting one. English writer Mark Ravenhill's Pool, No Water, because it fixes on the experiences of a clique of young artists and wrestles with the question of fame and success, goals that can be elusive for some, but easily and sometimes achieved sooner by others. The show opened last week and it continues until September 15th. Here is part of my conversation from last month with Rebecca, who happens to be an actor and a director herself.
I know you've been working as a director, but to step up as an artistic director, it's a big jump career-wise.
It's a big jump. And to be honest, it's one that I like insisted I needed Layla with me to do. This opportunity first came about, I like thought of Layla immediately. She's such an amazing director and educator and theater person. And I just knew that this was the kind of thing I could only take on with someone like her with me. So I'm just so grateful that she said yes and that we're in this ship together.
Well, you have an acting background. She's more behind the scenes, if I'm getting that right. So tell me how your friendship came to be.
We actually, I guess I could say that we became friends over a decade ago at Stratford Shakespeare School, which is like theater nerd camp. Mm. So a very specific type of person goes to a very intense Shakespeare camp. And so she and I met there, and that specific camp led to a very specific theater friendship. And although we're both from Montreal and I went to NTS and stayed in Montreal and then moved to Toronto, she went to BU in Boston. We've just kept in touch over the years. So then in the pandemic, we both ended up moving back to Montreal, and that's when we reconnected, I'd say, from like a theater point of view, and started talking about wanting to work together as theater people, as theater makers. And then Persephone just sort of fell from the sky in that perfect timing.
And we did really hope to have Layla here with us today, but she's lost her voice. So as you said, she went to school in Boston, and she's actually worked in a bunch of different festivals and theaters through the States over the last couple of years. I understand now she's teaching theater at the Study private school, and is, kind of reintegrating back into the theater community scene. And that's so interesting. You have this friendship that goes back years. So you have a sense of trust already between the two of you.
There's something to be said about trust and about shared values, and inside that a certain amount of shared taste. But certainly in terms of the shared values, I think she and I have both for years really, really craved theater that supports emerging artists and theater that emphasizes diverse stories. So it just so happens that it was just like this amazing thing that Persephone actually encapsulates those values already. And those are values that she and I have really cared about for years.
Well, speaking of integrating young artists, that is Persephone's raison d'être. It's been around for years as being a place where a lot of young actors kind of had their first semi or fully professional experience. So what does that mean for you? You just talked about how that's meaningful, but like maybe you could reach back having been a young actor yourself, what it means to get that first kind of job.
I think it's something that I've kept with me. I mean, I think I still consider myself an emerging artist. And it's something that's been a driving force in my work forever. I think that the opportunity to get a professional contract, but also just to be in a room where you're trusted and that you're given a high bar, a high artistic bar, is just a huge aspect of growth. And it's something that is, I think, unfortunately, it's a rare thing that we offer emerging artists the opportunities that they need for that growth. It's hard, and I understand it's hard to trust someone, trust an artist that you don't know. But yeah, like I said, it's something that I've I just think is hugely important to diversify our artistic community, and to offer these opportunities to people that might not get them otherwise. And that is, like, it's a foundational part of, well, it is the foundation of our company, but Layla and I are hoping to expand that mandate in the sense that emerging artists in the past for Persephone was specifically a term used for new graduates. And we're hoping to expand that term to be used for anyone who considers themselves emerging, including any artist that has a desire to re-emerge, which is a sort of an expansion of our mandate that we shared in a general auditioning call that we did last fall to, like, a huge successful reaction. There were so many people who craved the opportunity to re-emerge or consider themselves emerging artists, but felt that they had passed a certain age gap,
right,
where they didn't have the opportunity to sort of use that term or to find opportunities that would specifically allow them to grow.
So less about the age and really more about where you are in your career. And I'm sure with the pandemic, that's also been a huge influence. A lot of people put things on pause or gone off in different directions and are circling back to performance, perhaps. That is the voice of Rebecca Gibeon. That is the voice of Rebecca Gibeon, who is the new co-artistic director of Persephone Productions. And they're gearing up to present their first show of the season, Pool No Water, coming to the Siegel Center studio a week from today, September the 1st. And I'm chatting with Rebecca, and we were hoping as well to speak with Layla, but she's your co-artistic director. She's lost her voice. So interestingly enough, we talk about young artists and finding your way. The play that you guys have selected to work on is pretty apropos. It is about a young group of artists, and it's also about the question of, maybe not the question of success, but the question of whether success is a zero-sum game, how to make it, what happens when some people quote-unquote make it, and what happens when some people don't. It's a one-act play by Mark Ravenhill. Tell me more about the script.
It's a script that I have sort of had my eye on for years, I think for those exact reasons, that it's just so apropos of the young artist struggle and the thoughts that young artists grapple with. And then it's a script that popped into my brain again during the pandemic, because I think those questions about what it means to achieve success and the moral qualms of craving success in are brought to a completely new light in the context of the past 2.5 years that we've gone through. I think this idea of craving success, and as it's sort of talked about in the play, craving success in an almost individualistic sense, it takes on a certain darkness in a life or death context. And I think it's just a really interesting time to talk about that type of question. And then the play itself was written in 2001. So taking again those questions of success and putting them, just speaking those words in our 2022 context, where we have social media, where people's success is, like, blasted and shared in total new ways that Mark Ravenhill couldn't even have dreamed of in 2001. For all those reasons, I think it's a really interesting time to dive into this play.
Yeah, because no matter how many times, where you are, you open your phone or your laptop, you get bombarded by so many images of what it means to be successful. And it kind of puts you in the position of having to define what your success is. Can you tell me a little bit about the story, perhaps, in the sense of who is the person who achieves success and perhaps sets the others on edge? There's, I think, at least six characters that we're talking about here, right? Almost like a Friends sitcom setup. Is it the situation where one person just becomes, like, mega successful overnight?
So the idea is that it's this group of artists that they all sort of grew up together as, like, young people who were hoping to become artists. And then one of them, not necessarily overnight, but one of them achieves success that is, like, just out of proportion. It is, like, impressive and surprising to the group. But that said, the whole play is through their perspective. So one could, it's hard to say whether or not she deserves that success or not, because we are, we learn about her success through the eyes of everyone else in the group who are grappling with this envy that they have for her success. I should also say that the play is written, what I call, it's like a choral monologue. It's just one big chunk of text. So it can be done with essentially any number of people, which makes it so much fun to direct, because the director's job then becomes to decide how many actors are going to tell the story and who's going to say what words. I've seen a version of this play where there is an actor playing that person who achieves success. We've chosen to not have an actor play that person, that she's this anonymous, personality that is not someone that we meet. She's just, her story is told to us through their perspective and through their narration.
We're speaking with Rebecca Gibeon, who is the co-artistic director of Persephone Productions, gearing up for their first show of the season. Rebecca, I can't help but think about how becoming an artist and wanting to achieve something in the world of the arts, whether it's acting or maybe something else, like writing a book or something, that can be really nebulous. It's hard to kind of, you might say, I love to win this prize or get cast here, but there are so many things out of your control. You can only really manage mm-hmm. your own, you know, habits and your own work. So I'm wondering if you've had any thoughts, you know, as an actor yourself, someone who's getting into directing, mm-hmm. has this changed your thoughts about what it means to be successful as an artist?
Oh, that's such a good, interesting question. I mean, I think in the context of this play, like, there's something to be said for the immature aspect of wanting to be successful as like a point of arrival, and like the steps, the process to get there being unimportant. And it's just like this nebulous, vague success for the sake of success, as opposed to sort of wanting to be an actor because you crave working on a certain type of plays, crave working on a certain type of text, or you like working in a community of people. Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. I think for me, like, it's a question that sort of changes sometimes depending on the day, really. But I know for me, one thing that grounds me inside that is working on a project that allows me to ground myself in some values, so I don't get lost in the sort of competition for success, which I think can be sort of an individualistic journey. So something like Persephone Productions being aimed at offering a platform for emerging artists, like the emerging artist in me, is just so thrilled. Like, I would have given anything to have someone like mentor me. And I had those people in some ways in my life, but this opportunity grounds me in a place that, like, it's like success in a completely different way, in a way that I wouldn't have imagined for myself, I think, 10 years ago. And that feels like a really nice version of success.
That was Rebecca Gibeon, new co-artistic director of Persephone Productions. She is just embarking on this role with Lila Gayemi. Rebecca is an actor and director. Lila teaches theater at the Study Private School, and they're taking over from outgoing artistic director Gabrielle Soskin. Their first production of the season is Mark Ravenhill's Pool No Water at the Siegel Center Studio, running until the 15th of September, so next week. Tickets are $30, $20 for equity members and students. Get yours at siegelcenter.org or call 514-739-7944. Visit persephoneproductions.org for more information about the cast and show. You have been listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM at CK and at ckut.ca. Tonight you heard Lisa Rubin, executive director at the Siegel Center, looking ahead to her upcoming season, tagline, All the Feels. And Centaur Theater's Ida Holmes on the radical new show that will launch their 54th season soon to come. Plus, that theater company, Persephone Productions, I spoke with Rebecca Gibeon. You can see their show until the 15th of September. A very big thank you to all my guests. If you're looking for something to do this weekend, you can check out Pool No Water. Royal Mania also continues at Théâtre aux Écuries. And Marionette Plein La Rue, the outdoor marionette festival, it wraps up this weekend with a paid performance in Verdun near Promenade Wellington Saturday afternoon. Check out Promenade Wellington for more information.
as well. Théâtre aux Arts des Ruelles wraps up this weekend. They are doing three events, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at various points in Rosemont-le-Petit-Pratry. It's all free, a mix of outdoor circus, clowning, music. It's a lot of fun. So congrats to the team at Théâtre Festival des Arts des Ruelles. You can hear past episodes of Upstage at CKUT.ca under the archives. A very big thank you to Jack Soler, our spoken word coordinator, for making sure this show gets to air. And thank you for tuning in. I'm your host, Sarah Day. I'll speak with you next time on Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca. Have fun and stay safe. Up next is Grey Matters.
Join us for this year's edition of Shoney Market, winner of the Time Out's Best New Event Award for 2021. Shoney Market is a parade of 200 corgis, flavors from around the world, with over $3,000 in student giveaways from Desjardins, and incredible artists like High Classified, Perio Millennial, and Mansa and Friends. To learn more about the programming, participating restaurants, and contests, head to Instagram at ShoneyMTL. That's ShoneyMTL. Shoney Market, the taste of downtown, from September 8th to 11th between the Guy Concordia and Atwater Metro stations.
Are you a tenant in Montreal? Do you have questions about your rights? Your local housing committee can help. To find the housing committee for your neighborhood or for more resources, go to www.rclalq.qc.ca.
Good evening and welcome to the September 8th edition of Grey Matters. Tonight on the show we have a lecture by Henri Giroux entitled The Attack on Public Education. It was recorded in Hamilton, Ontario on July 25th of this year. Henri Giroux is a prominent public intellectual, prolific writer, commentator, and scholar. He teaches at McMaster University in Hamilton,